Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bijou Banter in the Zoom studio in our first episode of the summer. We got Orson Codd.
Hello.
Gamer Gregor Hoyer.
Hello.
And myself, Matthew Huh. And it is Saturday, June 12th or 11th. I don't even know what the date is. But we are going to be talking about two early summer movies that we're finally getting around to. And those are Top Gun Maverick, which is the long-awaited sequel to Top Gun, and Crimes of the Future, the latest David Cronenberg horror film. And we're going to begin with the former, Top Gun Maverick, which is a sequel to the 1986 classic, in quotes, Top Gun. And it was directed by Joseph Kosinski and stars Tom Cruise, Miles Teller, Jennifer Connelly, John Hamm, Glenn Powell, Lewis Pullman, Ed Harris, and Val Kilmer. And the plot of Top Gun Maverick is from IMDb. After more than 30 years of service as one of the Navy's top aviators, Pete Mitchell is where he belongs, and he pushes the envelope of a courageous test pilot in dodging the advancements in the rank that would ground him. And he is recruited to be a teacher for a new mission of Top Guns that will save, I guess, the world or their country. What do we think?
I actually really enjoyed this one. I'm guessing before I give my thoughts on this one, I should give my thoughts on the original film. I grew up on Top Gun. Me, my family is super obsessed with Top Gun. I mean, we're kind of a family that has a very fun, admiration for the military. And Top Gun was like one of those films that, you know, whenever we would put on, we know line for line, quote for quote, scene for scene. And it's like one of those films that, you know, like growing up, it's like it was definitely like something, you know, was an enjoyable watch. As a movie, it's not that good. It's very, it's not that well written, not that well edited. There are some scenes that are unintentionally homoerotic, and like there is sometimes where the soundtrack is utilized more than once, where it can kind of become a distraction. But otherwise, it's kind of, I think those qualities really help it be an entertaining film. It's not a particularly good movie. It's a film that definitely embraces the time period that it was in, kind of like how Space Jam embraced the 90s, Top Gun embraced the 80s. And I think it just, I think it's definitely a time capsule that, you know, I don't mind watching again, but I do admit it's not really that good of a movie. This one, definitely much better. I think there are a lot of things that really work with this one that didn't work so well in the original. I think a lot of it has to do with like how they, for one, shoot the flying scenes, because those are incredible. You can tell all the effort into those scenes really show on screen, and just kind of how realistic it works and looks, the new type of camera works and new type of angles that they use really make it incredibly thrilling. Because although the plot is incredibly standard and does go through some pretty predictable cliches and story-driven moments, it's still incredibly entertaining. It still has that quality that, you know, makes it incredibly fun to watch. And it knows that it's a sequel to a film that, you know, a lot of people really enjoy, and it does a good job kind of bringing it to the next generation. So I had a fun time with this one.
I haven't seen Maverick yet, but I'll just give my brief quick thoughts on the first Top Gun. It's the definition of pure 80s cheese. And like sometimes we watch 80s movies and we're like, oh, that's so cheesy, and it brings us back to that nostalgia, even though none of us were alive during the 80s, but we like to think we were. And I just don't think Top Gun, in my opinion at least, is like the good kind of 80s cheese. I'll never be able to get over the most cringy scene in the movie where they sing to the girl in the bar. It's terrible. I've watched it a couple times since the release of Maverick, and every time I cringe. But I mean, it does have, you know, its moments where it's like, oh, the flying stuff is cool. But yeah, it's just, I saw a funny tweet when Maverick came out, or like the first reactions that were like, Maverick is way better than Top Gun, the original. And it's not like saying Paddington 2 is better than Paddington 1. It's like saying Morbius is, your Avengers Infinity War is better than Morbius or something. And I was like, wow, that's great to hear that it's a lot better than the original.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to give my thoughts on the first Top Gun I had the complete opposite experience as Daniel did. I never saw Top Gun until a month before Maverick came out, and I actually thought it was pretty bad. I get that it's loved by a lot of people that grew up with it, especially if you're really into like either action films or Tom Cruise or planes or just like war movies or just fun stuff like that. But the story makes no sense. The writing is terrible. It has the worst romance I think I've ever seen in a movie. I'm not even kidding. And the editing is absolute trash. So yeah, Top Gun, not a very good movie. With that said, I was looking forward to Maverick because, first of all, this film has been delayed. I don't even know how many times, not only just due to COVID, but also just due to the production. And it seemed like what they were going to do is take it in a different direction where it's a quasi remake, but also builds off of where the story left off. It's not like the first Top Gun really had an open-ended narrative, but it just seemed like, oh yeah, it's nice to see these characters come back after so many years, especially if you have that affinity for it. So I went and saw it and I was very impressed. This is one of those sequels, much like The Suicide Squad or A Quiet Place Part 2 or Aliens, where it is a significant improvement over the first film. I think all the problems that the first Top Gun had are fixed because first of all, there's an actual story. There's actual character development. The romance is actually really sweet and identifiable. And you care about these characters. And above all that, the action scenes, which were mostly shot practically, are just stunning. This is one of those movies that you need to see on the biggest screen possible. I saw this in theaters three times, actually, in IMAX and in Dolby Cinema, which are premium formats. And just sitting there watching these planes zoom past at breakneck velocities, and it literally feels like you're in the cockpit with Tom Cruise flying in the jet. And it's one of those movies where it's kind of like Mission Impossible or Mad Max Fury Road, where it's so relentless and fast paced, but also you get really invested in the story, which is something that I never got in the first Top Gun, where I was just like, okay, this is just really kind of silly and I don't really care about what happens. But it just makes the characters way more interesting. Like Maverick actually has a strong arc where he has these feelings of guilt and regret, but also wants to live like he did back in his young days, but he realizes, no, he's still growing old. So it has different levels of relatability, especially depending on how old you are as an audience member. And it's interesting that this movie has already made so much money. It's like, and it's a 36-year-old sequel, basically. Like, it's not attached to any it is an IP, but it's not like Marvel or Star Wars. It's an older IP, but it still managed to break so many box office records, and people are still going out to see this movie, even though it's been out for a while. So it's just very impressive how this movie basically defied all the odds that it had against it and really created something one of a kind for a blockbuster.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would say that I think the whole reason it makes it much better than the original, I think, is because of the mission that they go on. Because in the original, there wasn't necessarily a mission that they went on until like the last third had, because really most of that movie was all about that romance and, you know, kind of Tom Cruise just kind of, you know, living in the danger zone or whatever, and just, you know, kind of being this like recluse of a character. I mean, it really didn't keep me that invested, I gotta be honest, because there was no stakes yet, really, with this. There wasn't really any stakes with the original Top Gun up until like the last third of the movie. All it was just going through this program and, you know, trying to, like, you know, have a contest of who could be the best pilot or best duo or whatever. I mean, that's what really the first one was. This one, it's like there's an actual mission here. It's like it's a mission that is incredibly improbable and very high stakes. And I think the whole build up to that mission really helps the film become like much better than the original, because there are stakes involved and there's a lot of things that, you know, are kind of making characters kind of question themselves. I really do like the relationship between Tom Cruise and Miles Teller in this film, because you see a lot of tension between the relationship, because spoilers to the original Top Gun, Tom Cruise's original partner, Goose, died in the original, and Rooster is the son of Goose. And so I think they really do a good job establishing that relationship and making it a very tense relationship. And they do, and they have a lot of really good callbacks to the original. I mean, sometimes they could be a bit distracting because obviously the quality of the 1980s film, like when they flash back to it, is vastly different from the quality of this film. But otherwise, like, you can tell its heart is in the right place. Like, it knows that people really love the original Top Gun. And knows that it's such an icon, and really pays respect to the original film, despite the fact that, you know, the original film in most cases is not really that good of a movie.
I think what also makes this film work too, and I think why it's been so accessible, is that you don't need to watch the first Top Gun to understand this one. I think it's another one of those legacy sequels, kind of like the Star Wars sequels, or even like Mad Max Fury Road, or another legacy sequel directed by Joseph Kosinski, Tron Legacy. It's one of those movies where you don't need to, your knowledge of the first film is not a prerequisite. And especially if you've seen the first film, it does help your experience. But even if I went into this not watching Top Gun, I still think I would have gotten that same enjoyment out of it, because it does give you enough information from the first film, but also you can use your context clues and infer, like, oh yeah, this character has had a history. He has a past, and also wants to live in the same way that he did back when he was younger, but is also growing older. And it has a much cleaner presentation. And obviously it's not, I know it's not really fair to compare the two because they were made in different points of time, especially when technology was a bit different, but the flying scenes are just so much better here. You can actually tell what's happening, because in the first Top Gun, it's edited in a way where it's like almost incomprehensible where the planes are. You don't know where they are, like in terms of like how high or if they're near land. It's just, it's very confusing in the editing room. But this one, it's very clear how they shoot it, because first of all, they did it all practically, which is even more impressive. Like, they attached 6 IMAX cameras to these jets. That's astonishing. And there's very little CGI effects, with probably the only exception would be like some explosions or something like that. But the fact that it's all practical action really sells the intensity, because it's like, okay, these stunt actors, or like Tom Cruise, if they mess up, they're done. So it adds a new level of tension that you don't really see in many action films nowadays, because they rely so much on CG. Like when you watch Avengers or something, you know, it's just all computer generated. There isn't that sense of fear or anxiety. Whereas something like this, or even in Mission Impossible as well, there is that level of danger because he's actually doing it. And that is incredibly impressive. We don't have that sense of scale in many action films nowadays, which is why I think Top Gun Maverick is so unique. And also is one of the reasons why I've been wanting to go back to watch it, not only just to bring other people that haven't seen it, but it's because it's a fun time. It's a fun movie, but it still manages to take its audience and its story seriously at the same time. It doesn't talk down to anybody. It treats them with respect.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom Cruise is always going to, if he's just going to keep throwing himself into danger no matter what, I think he's probably one of those few actors today that is actually doing his own stunts. And you can kind of see where the stunt work really pays off. Because, I mean, the guy is, he's almost 60. Like, it's still amazing that he's still pulling this off, and he's almost 60 years old. And it's kind of like he's at the point where it's like, he's just gonna do as many stunts as he can. I mean, he is indeed kind of like an evil Knievel in some ways. And I think it does really show in this film, because like, putting yourself in that much danger just to shoot a movie is pretty impressive. And they do such a good job with all these flying scenes and making you, like, feel like Matthew said, that you're in the cockpit with these characters and really feeling, like, all the tension. You feel the tension of it. Like, I do like how they plan out this whole mission and just showing, like, how dangerous it is. Because if one slip up, you could literally die on this mission. And I feel like that is definitely emphasized a lot here, and I think it really helps really add a lot of emotion and nuance to some of the characters. And I, the one aspect I actually did like that is definitely better than the original is the relationship between Tom Cruise and the love interest. This time it's played by Jennifer Connelly. The first one, I feel like the romance just wasn't hitting me. I don't know what it is. I think it was just trying to, you know, establish, like, you know, Tom Cruise is, like, you know, a big heartthrob actor. Like, one of those 80s heartthrobs that, you know, people really want to, like, people really, like, are attracted to. Kind of like, you know, how Patrick Swayze was kind of that way. I think people tried to do that so much with so many of the male actors in the 80s. And here it's like, I feel like the relationship is very well established because I think they both, because although we never really seen this character before, I mean, they did say she was someone in the original, but I think she was mentioned. I don't think she was actually shown in the original. But you can tell they do kind of have this bit of a history together, and they both play off each other so well. And I really do, and it's kind of a nice little, like, chemistry, and it's just nice chemistry between Cruise and Connelly that works out pretty well that I could not really get from Cruise and McGillis in the original.
Kind of going, not to detract, because I agree, the relationship of the first is terrible, but going back to Tom Cruise doing his own stunts, there's a really funny story Matt Damon told on, like, Conan or something once, and it was when they were filming one of the Mission Impossible movies. Tom Cruise told Matt Damon a story that there's, like, a scene. I haven't seen the first three, but where there's, like, someone attacking Tom Cruise, and they have, like, one of those Rambo knives or whatever, one of those giant ones, and they've got Tom Cruise pinned down. And the way they were going to do it was they were really, like, an inch away from stabbing Tom Cruise in the eye. And Tom Cruise said, just do it practically. We got to get, like, a close-up shot showing how close the knife is to my eye. And, like, the stunt coordinator was like, no, we're not doing that. We're not actually putting, you know, this giant, super sharp knife an inch away from your eyeball. That's too much of a risk. And so Tom Cruise says to Matt Damon, you want to know what I did? And Matt Damon's like, what? And Tom Cruise goes, I got a new stunt guy. So I was like, oh, that's pretty funny. I mean, it's true. You know, he is getting up there with his age, but it's crazy just to see how, like, fit he still is and how much he's willing to do with, like, jumping out of helicopters or climbing on the side of, like, you know, humongous buildings. I think Tom Cruise has made some hits or misses. He's definitely kind of, in my opinion, he always kind of plays the same character, but it just shows in each of his movies that just how dedicated he is to making them as realistic and as epic as possible. So I got to give him that. That's what makes him, I think, very much of a crowd pleaser. Is it's very authentic.
Apparently, almost got killed in that scene. Like, he literally, somebody forgot to pull the rope on that knife.
Yeah.
Literally almost got killed in that scene. And by the way, you're saying Matthew.
It's such a testament to, like, I think he's one of, like, the last remaining, like, true action stars that's, like, still in a way pushing the envelope and also one-upping his own career. Because, like, he's doing crazy stuff like hanging onto planes, or, like, climbing up, like, the world's tallest building now, like, in the fighter jets. Like, it seems like as actors grow older, you tend to slow down a bit more. I think Tom Cruise is the opposite. The older he gets, he's like, no, we're going to do crazier things. Like, he's probably going to go to space next, or, like, go to the center of the earth in his next movie. Like, I don't know what he's
going to
do.
He is going to space to film a movie.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah. Didn't he, like, Elon Musk or something, or, like, the SpaceX thing?
Yeah, that's
I remember
insane.
Reading that. It's like, yeah, just... I don't know what else he's going to do, but it's like, it's so exciting because even though Tom Cruise, he's a bit of a nut job sometimes, like, I can't deny that he is an incredible action star, and he's not a terrible actor either. Like, I think his performance in this movie is actually pretty good. I don't know if it's his strongest performance. I think he's really good in Eyes Wide Shut, and he's supposed to be very good in Magnolia as well.
Magnolia's and Collateral. It's just two very different Tom Cruise roles. Cause, you know, kind of what I said a second ago, he always kind of plays the same character, but definitely Eyes Wide Shut, Magnolia, and Collateral. Even that too. I always like Tom Cruise when he kind of plays the villainous roles, and definitely with Magnolia and Collateral, he definitely shows that he does have range. So that's, I do like him in that.
Yeah, matter of fact, Tom Cruise just kind of has this personality where it's like, you get the Tom Cruise where it's like, yeah, I'm awesome, I know it. I'm gonna show that I'm awesome. Or are you gonna get the new, more nuanced Tom Cruise, like Born on the 4th of July, Collateral, or Magnolia, or even Jerry Maguire in some senses, even though Jerry Maguire is still pretty much a typical Tom Cruise role. But I think, like, you know, and it's still, I think it is more incredible, like, you know, that he's still able to pull off a lot of these stunts and this action at this age. I think it's kind of like how Jackie Chan kind of was for a long time, or I mean, he probably still does it, but like when he, all the martial arts films that Jackie Chan has been in, you can see the amount of effort and stunt coordination that he puts into his films. And it's, and as older, the older he got, the better he got. I think Tom Cruise, like, yeah, definitely the same. Definitely the same type of actor who just kind of keeps doing crazy things, and he's almost 60. Like, it's still insane.
I think too, like another thing that really surprised me about this is that how as Top Gun is, I guess the first one was trying to be more like a drama in a way, but didn't really work too well just because it felt so all over the place. I think this movie is definitely an action drama, but the drama actually works really well. Like there's a scene with Val Kilmer as Iceman from the first one and Tom Cruise, which I don't really want to get into because it's not really a spoiler, but it is just like it's a really nice scene that the two share. And if you knowing the history with them in the first film, it's a really touching moment that I truly was not expecting. And it's moments like that when it deviates away from being an action spectacle, you could tell that this movie's heart is in the right place. Like that scene alone just proves that they didn't want to make this film just for money. But they actually wanted to tell a story. They wanted to make a continuation. That's when I realized, like, yeah, this movie is treating its audience with respect. Because most summer blockbusters, I feel like, of course, you want to go in to see like the fun action and just stuff blow up and have a good time. But at times, it feels almost condescending, where it's like, yeah, this is all you're going to get, but we're not going to make the characters interesting. We're not going to make the writing any good. We're just going to give you the action. Nothing else. It's just going to be brainless. Top Gun Maverick is far from brainless because it actually has a heart and it's very sincere with its storytelling. And moments like that really do make this stand out amongst other blockbusters, especially one that came out yesterday, Jurassic World 3. It's like it's night and day the difference in terms of a summer blockbuster.
So do you think with all the success this movie's having, because I don't, we can't get into specifics, but I'm just, you know, Tom Cruise never had a, he's always had big openings, but this was definitely his biggest yet. Do you, and all the, you know, critical praise, could there be a third one? Or do you think they're just gonna leave this how it is?
I think it they'll leave it as it is because like where it ends, and I don't want to spoil it, you could technically like continue it, but it ends in like such a perfect place where it's like, please don't do another one. Like I don't think they're gonna do a third one because I don't know what they'll do. Because if they do a third one, it'll probably just be a repeat of this. But I hope they just don't do it. Like, even though this movie's made so much money and people are still going out to see it, I think even Tom Cruise knows, like, yeah, this is where we're going to end it. And that's good. Have some restraint and like don't let box office dictate whether or not to make more sequels or not. Just like leave it as it is.
That's good.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I think it's like one of those movies that doesn't necessarily need to continue on after a while. I mean, I think it's definitely like one of those, because I think the original Top Gun was such a time capsule. Like, let's face it never really warranted a sequel. Because it really was a film that didn't need one. And they made one, but I think they really kind of took all those elements of the original and just kind of made them, and they made them a lot better and a lot more entertaining. And I think it works better for the film if, like, you just kind of leave it as is, and you, you know, let the legacy of the original Top Gun be admired while also admiring the work, the filmmaking in this one, without having to, you know, continue the story. Because I don't think there's really anything else you can do with this. It's not like Marvel, where it's like there's a villain in these movies, or there is a threat that's always going to be imminent throughout the next few set of films. I think it's more of a film that's going to kind of continue with just being itself and not having to, you know, go to the franchise potential that, you know, like Marvel has been trying to do, that Marvel's been doing for like over 20 years now. I'm not 20, but over like, I don't know, like over 15 or whatever, I don't know. But I think it definitely is one of those films where I think it just needs to kind of stay where it is and, you know, just be admired for what it is. And I think that's kind of where Top Gun Maverick really stands.
I will say now that I think about it more, it's honestly really surprising to me. They've never, to the best of my knowledge, used Tom Cruise as a villain in the Fast and Furious franchise. That just seems like a perfect fit, knowing how like wild those movies are and how they keep getting more insane than the last. You would think they'd want to have someone like him on their side, but who knows? Maybe they will for the last one.
Probably too expensive. And
That
also Tom
was
Cruise doesn't really do
crazy.
supporting roles anymore. Like he's barely had any supporting roles in his entire career. He's such a high profile star. It's like you need that for like your selling point.
I mean, unless you like count, like, say something like Tropic Thunder or Rock of Ages, like, really, he hasn't really done movies where he's the supporting actor. I mean, Collateral, technically, he has, but nah, he was the main actor in that one, never mind. But yeah, like, he has not been the supporting actor because I think it's like he's just one of those stars where it's like he's gonna be the main actor in all of his movies, no matter what. Even like Rock of Ages, like they had Tom Cruise as like the biggest selling point in that movie. Like they didn't have anybody else because who's gonna watch Julianne Hough or Diego Boneta? Nobody. It's gonna be people are gonna watch Tom Cruise. And even in Tropic Thunder, it came as a surprise to people that Tom Cruise was in the movie because the makeup was so good. And the performance was so good. Like nobody just knew. Nobody knew it was Tom Cruise. But otherwise, it's like Tom Cruise is just the main star all around. And I highly doubt. I bet he'll if he ever does like something like Fast and Furious, he'll upstage everybody in that movie.
Yeah, Tom Cruise. We're just about out of time for our conversation on Top Gun Maverick. So, final thoughts?
Yeah, this was a really good film. I think it's just nice to kind of see a movie that, you know, just knows what it is and really has a lot of heart and passion put into it. Because initially this is a sequel that doesn't really need to exist, but it does really respect its audience, both older audiences and newer audiences, and really embraces what it is. It's Top Gun Maverick. The flight scenes are cool. Tom Cruise is still doing insane stuff at the age of 59, and it's still Top Gun. So yeah, I give this one a 7 out of 10.
This movie's really great. I think for a mainstream blockbuster is probably one of my favorite action films of the past 10 years, just because it not only excels in the action spectacle, but for all the reasons I've said before, it respects the original, it builds off of it and improves upon its flaws to make an even better product. Like it's one of those sequels that it doesn't require you to watch the first film, but I think if you do watch it, you'll only come out of the second one liking it even more. Because I can't see anyone, even if you love the first Top Gun, I'll be very surprised if there's someone out there that said, like, yeah, Maverick was good, but wasn't as good as the first one. It's like it's almost nearly impossible, at least in my eyes. And for most of the people I know that saw it, they have a similar consensus. And I highly recommend checking out, especially in a theater. It's one of those movies that you should see with the best sound system on the biggest screen, because it is that type of immersive experience of a grand action movie. And I think it's awesome. It's still playing in theaters. Check it out if you would like to. And I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I think it's awesome. So we're going to move on from Top Gun Maverick to a horror film from an acclaimed director known as David Cronenberg, and that is Crimes of the Future. And it's his first horror film in almost over 20 years. He's also well known for directing films like The Fly, Videodrome, and Crash 1996. And it stars Viggo Mortensen, Lea Seydoux, and Kristen Stewart. And the plot, it's a very interesting, weird horror film from IMDb. It's humans adapt to a synthetic environment with new transformations and mutations. And with his partner Caprice. Saul Tensor is a celebrity performance artist publicly showcasing a metamorphosis of his organs and performances, basically through surgery, self-mutilation, and art. This is a very interesting film. And what do we think?
So I'm a huge, huge David Cronenberg fan. I love The Fly and Shivers. And he originally back in the I think it was like 1970, he made a student film called Crimes of the Future. It has nothing to do with what this version is. But then back in the 90s, he wrote this movie and he could never get the funding to get it made. And now he finally has. It's underwhelming because it's, you know, from people that read it back in the 90s were like, oh, this would be like the culmination of all his body horror movies and how wild it is. And like, you know, some of the imagery is like freaky. How could you do it back in the late 90s, early 2000s? Well, now obviously we have the technology to do that. And I'll praise what they were able to do with some of the cool designs and stuff. But the story, I just didn't feel like was all there. I think even both of your reviews on Letterboxd kind of said the same thing, where it's like, there's promise, but it doesn't feel like they're developed all the way. For, again, a story that's been in the works for, you know, 25 years now, you think he would go back and be like, maybe I should readjust this or something. The performances are great. And, you know, again, I love what Cronenberg is able to do with some of his hidden themes and metaphors. But the movie just felt very kind of stale to me. It's more talky than I expected. Like, there's like really three scenes where, like, you know, some wild stuff is going down, and then the rest is just characters in the shadows kind of talking with one another about these big concepts and big ideas. And it can leave someone just kind of scratching their head after the movie going, what exactly was going on?
Yeah, this movie, I think, has very compelling concepts, ideas, and commentary, but I feel like the story was a little bit undercooked. I feel that there is a lot of things that, you know, were working pretty nicely. I think I really like a lot of the technical aspects of this film. I really like all the makeup on some of the characters. I really like the production design, and the performances are relatively solid. And it's very well shot, but I think it just as a story, it's not really that compelling. Because although you have all those pieces there to like make a very fascinating sci-fi horror film, it really leaves a lot to be desired. And I think David Cronenberg, like, I'm not really a big fan of Cronenberg. I mean, I admire the filmmaker. He's a very obviously a very talented science fiction filmmaker. I liked Scanners, I liked The Fly, I liked Crash 1996. I mean, he is a very solid director that has a lot of really solid ideas that actually impacted the film genre of science fiction and horror. But I feel like that there's always like some ideas where he's just always shorthanded of, and I think this one was like one of those films where it just leaves a lot to be desired, and I kind of wish there was a lot more that was done in this film that could have made it feel a little bit more satisfying near the end.
Yeah, I've only seen a few. Actually, I've only seen one David Cronenberg film actually before seeing this, and that was Videodrome, which I really like Videodrome. And we also talked about his son's film Possessor in a past episode on Banter. And after I've known about David Cronenberg for a while now, and in terms of his horror style filmmaking, it's very out there. It's very bizarre, but it's also could be very compelling too at the same time. Crimes of the Future was his first film in almost 10 years. So he hasn't made a film in a while. And as stated earlier, it's his first horror film in over 20 years. So he's returning back to genre territory that he hasn't tapped into for a while, but it's also the genre that made him famous in the first place. So I was pretty interested, especially hearing what the plot was. It seemed very bizarre, but also sounded very compelling too. And walking out of the theater, I remember liking it a bit more when I first saw it, but then it's one of those instances where I don't think the movie necessarily makes you think more highly of it. The more you think about it, it just makes less and less sense the more you think about it, because the idea is there. And its approach to its idea is really special, because like what I got out of it is basically it's one of those films where it's like, oh, art has meaning, and it's through the performance, through the individual, where art comes out. And that's incredibly pretentious. Like, that is super pretentious, especially in the way that Cronenberg writes this movie, because it sounds like a bunch of college students trying to create something very thought-provoking and meaningful, and it doesn't. It just sounds very stilted and weird. But the approach to how Cronenberg shows off the power of performance art is fascinating, with the surgery, because the tagline of the movie, how it's being advertised and marketed, and one of the characters says it too, is that surgery is the new sex, which sounds silly on paper, but when you hear it in the context of the movie, it does carry a lot of meaning to that. But it's just approach to exploring that is not fully realized. There's moments where the film just goes on for lengthy expository dialogue scenes that I honestly don't really care for, and especially within the characters too. The characters are not very interesting or well-defined. What is, though, and I wish I found myself being more interested about this more so than anything, is the world. I think the world that it creates is very bizarre. It's an unspecified future where there's all this like climate change and pollution too. Everything looks so desolate and dark and abandoned. And it's like, this could be a direction where our society could be heading towards our kind of future, which shows a lot of promise, but they don't really explore the world. It's not like in Blade Runner where they focus a lot on just sort of the technology or the people. It just seems like he had an idea and he had the basic thesis, but didn't expand outward from it. And it's disappointing because there are good things about it too. The makeup and visual effects, especially since it's all practical, Cronenberg does a lot of that. It looks really real and synthetic. And especially with the surgery scenes, it's like, wow, like it looks like they're actually doing the surgery. And the makeup is just so like bizarre at times too. Like, there's this guy that has ears all over his body and it just looks very out there and strange. But it's almost like he doesn't really expand upon the strangeness, which I think is disappointing. Because in like Videodrome, for example, which is a very bizarre movie, that has commentary that I think was very ahead of its time and was explored almost like so well, despite it being 20 minutes shorter than this movie. So I don't know. It was a very mixed experience that I was hoping to get a lot more out of.
Well, it's wild too, because when this movie was doing the rounds at the festivals about a month ago, Cronenberg was like, yeah, this movie's going to give everyone panic attacks and you're going to faint in the theater and walk out. I don't know. Like, maybe it's because I've just seen so many horror, thriller, dystopian sci-fi movies, but I didn't like feel like there were like certainly scenes where the imagery was like, whoa, that's, you know, certainly a lot. But I think I told this to you, Matthew, and after I'd seen the movie, I was like, to me, it just felt like it was scenes stitched together with like really loud music that was trying to, you know, get me to be like, oh my God, my heart is racing. But I was like, it wasn't effective. They didn't mesh well. So, and even Viggo Mortensen made a joke. He was like, I don't even know what Cronenberg was talking about. He was the only one to walk out of the theater because he had to go to the bathroom. So I'm just, maybe it's one of those things where it's like, well, director of course praises their movie and calls it intense, but yeah, I just don't know what he was trying to get at with that, because Crash is certainly more disturbing, Dead Ringers is certainly more disturbing, even Videodrome is. So I don't know.
I mean, there is like a sense of dread in this film, like the world, this, because like when you see the locations, like you kind of see like, yeah, this is basically, they feel so empty. Like, you don't get that many, you don't see that many people, you don't see that much, see so much of this society until you go into, like, those performance spaces. Like, there is a sense of dread, like, you can kind of see, like, humanity has kind of just lost its way a bit, and, you know, they're so, like, desperate for entertainment that apparently surgery is the most entertaining thing to watch right now. I find it to be pretty interesting. And also I do kind of like the commentary about kind of art and, you know, how sometimes art can be controlled. I think that was very, very well tapped on in the climax of the film, where you kind of see everything kind of, you think everything is going to go right, but then all of a sudden everything just looks so wrong in some aspects, and sometimes, like, for me, it was in the back of my head for a bit, where it's like I was trying to get a grasp on what it was trying to do, but then I realized that, you know, it is something that is pretty, that fits into like a lot of like, you know, corporations kind of, you know, seeing things like trying to control things that are, new and they make it feel like it's so processed and so typical. And I do really like the idea that Cronenberg tapped on here, where it's like there sometimes there's so much control over one's art that the art just kind of looks like everything that is just very typical. And, you know, and sometimes like things that are typical can be judged pretty harshly. And I think that was a very good idea that Cronenberg really tapped on.
I would argue that that type of themes, though, especially with the exploration and its commentating on, it seems like it came out way too late, because we've had so many films that I'm trying to think of an example of one, and for some reason nothing is coming to my head. But especially since we're now in the year of 2022, we've had many films that commentate on sort of the integrity of artistic expression, and also different ways of like viewing like sort of weird acts. Like you could interpret that perhaps the surgery, using that as like for entertainment, could be the way of like how people watch, I don't know if I could say this word, pornography, for instance. Like there's that angle. And correct me if I'm wrong, Orson, because I know you know way more about Cronenberg than I do. He had this idea in his head like 20 years ago, yeah. Right? If yeah. this came out in 2002 and he was commenting on that when it was like the early days of the internet before YouTube and stuff, that would have been seen as like incredibly ahead of its time. But now in this age where there's so many other movies and also other works of media that have that sort of commentary on it and do it in a way that's so surface level, it feels like it's like almost past sell-by date in a way. Because even though there are interesting approaches to it, it's not only not explored well, but it's not even like it's that interesting or as unique. The subject matter that's exploring isn't even that unique to begin with. So I think that's what's disappointing about it too.
Well, originally this was supposed to come out after Crash, which I don't know if either of you have seen that, but that is just a very wild and disturbing movie. And again, to, you know, echo what you said, if this had came out after that, I think people's minds would have been blown, because a lot of people saw Crash and were like, what the heck was that? And so if this followed it up, I think, again, other people still would have, you know, felt the same way of like, whoa, this dude clearly has like, you know, some wild things going on in his head in a good way. It's just, it's disappointing that, like, you know, he hasn't directed a movie in almost 10 years now, and a horror movie in almost 20 years. And that, you know, everyone back in the 90s was like, this could have been the culmination of all of his horror and body horror stuff, but it was just kind of fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely kind of the mindset, because it's kind of like the issue that, and obviously this is a vastly different film, is the issue with Mank, where that was a screenplay that was written way back in the 90s. And David Fincher decided, like, so his dad wrote the screenplay, and his dad unfortunately passed away before the film could even hit production. And so as an admiration to his dad, he basically put it, released it in 20 or 30 years later after his dad has finished like that screenplay. And because I think like if Mank was probably released back in like that decade, it probably would have been seen as like a very great film. But now it's just, I mean, but since it was released in 2020, like people kind of like, I mean, although I liked the film, I do kind of say like it would have been something that much, that might have been better back in the 90s than it would have been today. And you can kind of, and I think this one definitely has the same argument, because I think a lot of the concepts that Cronenberg has have already really been tapped upon. As like Matthew said, I mean, although I was very fascinated by like how the climax was handled, I do have to admit, like it is something that, you know, has been done before so many times. I mean, Blade Runner was practically already ahead of this by the time this film came out. And I think that artistic integrity is like something that, you know, is always gonna be tapped upon in cinema, because, you know, there's always gonna be directors out there that, you know, are against the corporate level of filmmaking and against kind of studio control. And you can kind of argue the same thing of like TV shows and music. I mean, people have been trying to like tap upon this for years, in terms of the entertainment industry. And I think Cronenberg definitely was a little bit late to the party, because although he did such a good job of like, you know, establishing the importance of artistic integrity, it definitely was an idea that I think was utilized much better in some other and other means of entertainment.
What did we think of the performances? Because this is one element that was probably one of the most disappointing, is that I didn't think the performances were that great. And you could argue, like, oh, it's meant to be stilted and awkward, but it's still like, whenever these actors, these are the three actors, they're very talented. They've shown their talent in many other films. And it just seems like they're under such incredible restraint to like, kind of like be more, I want to say emotional, because it's obvious that Cronenberg's going for, in a way, kind of an awkward, stilted society. But every time when there's a sense of like emotion or fear, it just seems way too held back and almost comes off as very too robotic in a way.
Yeah, Cronenberg, the way he directs his actors sometimes is, you know, kind of exactly what you said, to be very robotic and monotone. It's the biggest reason as to why I'm not a huge fan of Scanners. It's just, go watch that movie. And there's a character that literally is on the phone with someone that their line is like, "Goodbye, Dr. Ruth." And it's like, that is just so robotic. And it's, I think the performances are fine. It's kind of disappointing because Cronenberg and Viggo Mortensen have worked together for years now on Eastern Promises and A History of Violence, which are both pretty good films. And then this here, it's just kind of, again, what you said, it's very void of emotion. And you know, the other two wonderful actresses in this movie are talented as well, but Kristen Stewart isn't given much to do. She's in a couple scenes. And then Lea Seydoux is just kind of, I don't know, she just is, again, very robotic, a lot like Viggo Mortensen, but I still think they're solid performances. Just, they could have been a little bit better.
I mean, I think Lea Seydoux is one of the only actors that showed some emotion in her performance. I mean, the others, like, you kind of get, like, this weird, it's like they all kind of have this little bit of a weird tick to them. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, forgot the actor's name, but it's kind of the one that's in charge. The one that works with Kristen Stewart's character, like, you can kind of tell, like, there's some element of, like, where, like, there's some weird elements to that character, where he's just incredibly quirky and seems incredibly obsessed. Like, there are some moments where it's, like, they're all super obsessed with, like, you know, the surgery-type performances that have been given by the main character. So, like, you can kind of tell, like, this is a very crazy, crazy society, but I feel like, because I feel like the acting did it well enough to kind of, like, service, like, what Cronenberg was going for, like, people that are kind of obsessed with this type of entertainment and, you know, this type of thing where it's, like, they're so obsessed that, you know, they would do anything, even if it's illegal, that to just, you know, embrace that type of entertainment. So I can kind of see what Cronenberg was trying to go for. So, I mean, and I think it came across to me. I mean, I think the performances were fine. They were not like Oscar worthy performances, but I think they were performances that, you know, fit in with what Cronenberg was trying to do.
That's interesting too. It's like, if this is meant to be a very crazy, deranged society, that's not really how the images or the intensity of the film is elicited out of me. Because, like, apparently Cronenberg said, like, yeah, the last 20 minutes are absolutely insane and it's like wild and it's gonna make you squeamish. And it's just like, I don't know, like Titan was more squeamish and like,
or even like, there's certainly something in the last 20 minutes that made me go, how'd they get away with that? But I mean, obviously I know it's fake, it's not real, but at the same time, yeah, it's uncomfortable to look at, but it's like, I don't know if I would have passed out. Like, I guess maybe if, I don't want to give too much away, but if I was a certain thing in my life, if you know what I mean, okay, I would be like, that is hard to watch. But I was like, I don't know, like, if it was exactly what he wanted, especially because, like, that's really only like 5 minutes of the last 20 minutes, and then the rest is just characters talking, and it's like, well, that bores me more.
The moment in Everything Everywhere All at Once when Wayman is like cutting his hand with like trying to get a paper cut, that was more disturbing than this entire movie. And it's a shame because, like, I love the makeup in the surgery scenes. Like, it's really impressive makeup, especially not just in the face, but like on the body itself, like the chest too. It's like, you can tell, like, it's practical effects and it's very impressive. But I was more just like, I think I was more impressed than disturbed. Like, I wasn't like squeamish or anything. It's like, oh wow, how did they do that? which is the exact opposite reaction that I think Cronenberg was trying to elicit out of me. So it's bizarre. Like, I just don't understand what his approach really was to this subject matter. Because if in the hands of either a different director or a different screenwriter, like if Julia de Cornell wrote this film or directed it, you know, it would have just been absolute off the walls insanity and probably would have gotten under your skin in ways that are unimaginable. It's unfortunately not like that, which I really don't understand how people walked out of this movie at Cannes.
So one thing I can praise, though, that we haven't brought up yet, that Cronenberg always nails in his movies, is the sound design. Mm-hmm. This one definitely deals with like a lot of bodily squirmy sounds and like bones. David Cronenberg always knows how to do bones correctly. So with like, you know, the weird chairs in this, or like the weird bed Viggo Mortensen sleeps in. So I'll praise that. That actually I thought was really effective, especially in like a big theater. It's like maybe on one side you got like bones cracking, and then on the other side you've got you know, weird squirmy body sounds. So I like that element about it. It always
I mean, that definitely did work out. I think the sound design is very incredible in this film. And I think the score from Howard Shore really fits in with it as well. I mean, although the score can kind of come off as a little bit repetitive sometimes, but I still think like the sound design really works for this film, because there's like times where it's like you just are, because either way, like you're still a bit unsettled, but it's not, but I feel like that Cronenberg was hoping that, you know, everybody was going to be more unsettled, more disturbed by this film. And I think the sound design nailed like the unsettling, disturbing aspects. I don't think the other elements nailed them quite as well as the sound design did, which is, I think, very unfortunate, because I think Cronenberg's like, yeah, I mean, you're going to be so disturbed, you're going to faint at the sight of this film. And it's like, I don't know, I didn't faint at the sight of this film. I just was more like, yeah, I mean, it's unsettling, it's weird, but it's like, it doesn't necessarily, I feel like we've seen more disturbing content than this.
Yeah, maybe if, like I said, I think it just came out too late. If this came out in the 90s, I don't know if people have walked out in the 90s, perhaps, but it just probably would have made a much bigger impact in terms of how it explored its themes of it, like artistic integrity, I guess, too, just because, like you said, Daniel, Blade Runner was already out by this time, and Blade Runner 2049 has since come out, which is very emblematic of like what's been of like kind of our society, and also what could happen in our future. And that feels like very current. It doesn't feel like it's really dated or anything. This feels like it's already been dated, and it came out like last week. So I don't know. It's probably the best word to describe it is underwhelming. It's an underwhelming film, unfortunately. So yeah, you got anything else to add?
I mean, I think we kind of summed up what this film was. I mean, definitely something that it was a good idea. It's just that it probably could have been fleshed out more while Cronenberg was doing his other films, and, you know, in the other 10 years since like his last film, I think there could have been a lot more. But yeah, I think we all kind of summed it up.
Yeah, so final thoughts then on Crimes of the Future?
Again, I'm a huge David Cronenberg fan, and any movie he does, I will always go see in theaters. But I wanted to save this for my final thoughts. It's definitely one, when it comes out on like Blu-ray or on the streaming, I'll watch it again. I think it very much deserves a rewatch. You know, maybe it'll flesh out more of the ideas that I missed upon, or like, you know, just see things that, I don't know, we'll have to see. But I know Cronenberg's next movie starts shooting next year, so I'm glad to see that he's getting back into the directing game. I think his next two movies have already been confirmed. One of them's an original idea, and the other one's based off of a novel he wrote. So that'll be exciting. Yes, Crimes of the Future was underwhelming. There are some interesting elements in it, but it could have just been fleshed out. Ooh, see what I did there? Fleshed out a little bit more. So I'm probably going to give Crimes of the Future right now a 5 out of 10. Like, I'm very just middle of the road on it. I want to watch it again, like I said, but it was underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, I think this film had a lot of really good, compelling ideas and commentary, and a lot of the technical aspects worked. I just feel like that the film is a little bit, and it's a little bit slow, and it's very, and I wouldn't say predictable, but I felt like they could have been more done with the scripts before Cronenberg decided to start shooting. Because I feel like there's a lot of good ideas, a lot of good visual effects, a lot of good makeup, a lot of good aspects, you know, that we expect from David Cronenberg. But I feel like there could have been more utilized in terms of the screenplay and a little bit more that, you know, can make it feel, like Cronenberg said, disturbing till somebody faints in the theater or walks out. I think there could have been a lot more used. But otherwise, I think it's an okay film. I think there are just a lot of, I think there, it just leaves a lot to be desired, unfortunately. And I'm going to give this one a, I think, generous 6 out of 10.
Pretty much in the same boat as you two. Good ideas, really promising concept, just doesn't really deliver on what it promises. And being the fact that I haven't seen many Cronenberg films, like I can't really make comparisons, but even I know it's like, despite not seeing a lot of them, I could tell it's like seems to be more of a weaker tier Cronenberg. So it would have been really cool to see perhaps another draft of the screenplay, like maybe flesh out the kind of what you said, flesh out the ideas, make the dialogue less stilted, and also make the characters more interesting. But for what we do get, it's like there are still things that are very impressive in terms of its world building and also like the makeup and also and just the sets too. It's just such a bizarre, strange looking world. I just wish the story kind of like in the themes followed suit with that. So I'm also gonna give it a 6 out of 10. It's a bit of a higher score than, but it's like I'm gonna give it a little bit. I'll give it the points where it deserves. So yeah. And that concludes this episode of BG Banter. Tune in next time where I don't know what we're gonna be talking about. Perhaps Jurassic World 3 or maybe Lightyear, or what was that?
Yeah, maybe Lightyear. Maybe Lightyear.
Yeah.
I'm actually hyped for that. Not gonna lie.
It just depends on when we get around to recording that. But until next time, I've been Matthew.
I've been Orson.
And I've been Daniel.
And we will see you all next time. Bye-bye.